Hello, hi, Mulweni, and welcome to the solo series. Today is Thursday, the 19th of January 2023, and the significance of why I've decided to highlight this timestamp is because I had announced, like I had previously announced, that I would be releasing new episodes. And I'm at a point in my life, especially with the intention with this podcast, from the very beginning when I started it 3 years ago, I was always very intentional about doing this podcast, not as a podcast for hits, not as a podcast for, I guess, for commercial reasons. This is not a podcast to make money. This is a podcast I started to have conversations with myself that I share with the world, and those that relate or those that this podcast reach, I always hope that it would spark something. I'm not perfect. I'm a human being. I'm a spirit. My human beingness will die, my spirit will go on. And through that process, while I'm still on this realm, I'd like for it to be a recording or recordings of some sort that will help people on their journeys in whatever way they feel they relate. But at the end of the day, I'm a work in progress. It's taken me this long to do this podcast because this podcast is a process through time. Process through time, a collection of my evolution through the years. And I started this podcast at a time where I was feeling very, very low. I had lost my business. I hated myself. I hated the world. I was going crazy. I didn't know what was happening to me. I was losing friends. I was losing everything. Then the podcast continued to a point where I was healing. I was doing great. I was getting some work. And then things just got really bad. I hit low in ways that I never imagined. Lows that I never thought I would experience. Lows that I felt were unfair. Lows that I felt, what is going on? What is happening to me? Why is this happening to me? And it gets to a point where you've been suffering for so long. You lose hope in yourself, your humanity. You lose hope in the sense of in the sense of your being. Now you might ask yourself, like, what am I actually talking about? So let's rewind for a second. Especially for those that are joining this podcast for the first time. My name is Siyabonga Peile. Born and bred in Cape Town. Grew up between Cape Town and the Eastern Cape. And after, in high school, I founded a blog called The Threaded Man. A couple of years later, the blog blows up, becomes one of the biggest things in this country. And the blog became bigger than me. It created platforms for so many creatives who are doing well in the industry, you know. And I got to work on some amazing projects with young people. Part of the reason why I started The Threaded Man was to build a platform for black kids to know ukuthi they too can create no matter what background they come from. And it really did very, very well. But then it ended really badly. It ended with me being outed on Twitter as a scammer, or labeled as a scammer, because I had failed to pay people. It ended up with me losing a lot of friends, people I worked with, people I trusted. Some of these people are people I went with to high school. There was a lot of pain. There was a lot of regret. There was a lot of blaming going around during that time. On my end, when I look back at my business, it failed because I failed at a lot of things that I was never prepared for. I didn't come from money. I didn't come from fame. I come from a humble family from the Eastern Cape. I didn't know people could take advantage. I didn't know how Joburg worked, moved to a new city. And moving to this new city, I'm coming with my idea, you know, bringing people on board, believing we're all together in this. And we are together, things do well. And then when things go bad, you know, people start pointing fingers. I was very responsible for the downfall of my company. I didn't manage money well. Not that I actually spent the money. I overspent on salaries. I overspent on operations because people were not funding those kind of projects at that time. I overpaid for people to advise me, lawyers. I overpaid people to come and help me in the business, and those people ended up taking advantage. And I was left alone, left blamed, couldn't pay people, couldn't do projects. And that ended up on Twitter. People who didn't even know me from a bar of soap, you know, were tweeting a lot of hurtful things during that time. I felt blame for the situation that I found myself in, but at the same time, I felt it was not fair at the time and did not understand how I could work so hard and lose everything. Because everyone that I've ever worked with, I was very, very honest. I always put my heart on the table. But God had a bigger plan. I thought it was the end for me. Genuinely speaking now, freely speaking, I thought it was the end. I couldn't go anywhere. I lost everything. I lost my place in Joburg. I lost my reputation. I lost my whole entire life. Everything shrank. I couldn't go to public spaces without people discussing my downfall. Isn't that the guy who didn't pay the models? No one took the time to understand the context of the models. The models were hired essentially by AFI, whom we were working for. AFI put us under not so great working conditions, which compromised us financially, which led to us not being able to pay models, which led to the models going online, which led to the downfall of my company. When people first heard this story, people I knew, people I'd helped, people I thought, even when I'm wrong, they'll come and talk to me and say, Sia, what's going on with your business? How can we help you? I knew people that were older than me, people who were leeching on me. And these people at the time where I needed them, they were just not there. You might say I was naive, I was stupid, but I was. I didn't know the reality of the world. I was leading with my heart. And these people pushing me to feel guilty, pushing me to the point of suicide. And people always talk about how social media has no real life consequences or not. Let me tell you this, like, I lost everything trying to pay people, lost my place, had to move back to Cape Town. In moving back to Cape Town, I had to move back to my grandfather's house in Langa Township. Had to live again in, like, and genuinely speak, I'm not saying this to be dramatic, but living in poverty conditions, you know, living in a house where I am very grateful. I'm comfortable with where I'm staying. I'm comfortable with the privilege of having a roof over my head. There's never a doubt, but it is a shock to the system when you are traveling to Paris, traveling to London, doing all these amazing projects. You're on magazine covers. You're doing well for yourself. You think you're on a good journey. You think, you know, at that, especially at 21, you know, running a company that's valued in the millions, like, and having the opportunity to work with really gifted people and not understand the other side of that, you know. And then coming back, you know, to Cape Town with nothing, having to live in the house that I live in. And as much as I'm grateful and I'm happy, it's not what I was used to or what I had built for myself. I had to live in a house now where, you know, I don't have running water. I do have running water, but I don't have a bathroom or shower. You know, I have to warm up my water, wash in the Vascom. Had to learn to take taxis. Had to depend on my parents and even my siblings at times and my dad, you know, for money and for funds to buy even the little thing. If I need underwear, if I need toothpaste, I had to literally beg from my parents for 5 years. Couldn't get a job anyway when I have a resume that speaks for itself, from being the youngest person on Forbes magazine to to being one of the first South Africans to become a brand ambassador for a global brand at that time, to doing design collaborations with brands that were coming to South Africa for the first time, like H&M, just doing these amazing projects, like, you know, and building this company, this machine through a vision I had with no one, you know, not that like with no one necessarily in that sense, but I worked hard. Like there was no one carrying my vision for me. You know, there were collaborators and people, but I was carrying the vision. I was carrying the ideas. I was doing the styling. I was saying how I wanted things, and that worked. And people around me were not happy about that to a certain level. And I don't know why. I'll never understand why. They've never told me why, but I just gave of myself because as human beings, we're all flawed. We're all learning. And if people are on a journey together, I'm loyal to that. That I'm not loyal because I'm perfect. I'm loyal because I know that even if you make a mistake or I make, we can fix it. We can keep going. We can work on it. I've always been someone who is conscious that I'm not perfect and I'm always willing to work on it. So, yeah. So for 5 years, couldn't get a job and no one would hire me. No one would wanna even look my way. I was a scandal. Then after year one of not being able to find a job, I thought year two would get better. Didn't get better. Year three didn't get better. And then people would laugh at me in taxis, socially, even at times where I was trying to now to accept, okay, I've lost real man. Let me try rebuild life. Let me try, you know, learn how to DJ, try get gigs, try do things. And wherever I went, people kind of looked at me with that eye. That you are that guy that didn't pay the models. That was the story that defined me. And even with the whole situation with the models, I got to a point where I started paying some of them, negotiating even years after, you know, to sort that out. How much were these models, you know, owed? They were owed, most of them were owed 500, some were owed 1,000. You know, these was literally a stipend that was owed, but the money had run so dry that I couldn't pay them. But the way it came out on social media, it's like I owed these people, you know, money that was agreed they were working for. And in fact, it was to just help them cover transport. Not to say that I shouldn't have paid them. I did pay them, some of them actually. Some of them I came and I paid them because they were willing to settle. But some refused for me to get paid and they claimed emotional damage and wanted 1 million rands. Imagine, one of them wanted 1 million. You know, and they made threats and all these things. And those made me really feel bad. You know, that made me feel bad. And what's crazy about it, even through the process of working with these models, I was very vocal about the conditions I was working under and how I was not paid. And I was even crying, and they saw the heart and soul I put into that project and how I fought for them as well. And how everything played out was just so crazy. And even on social media, I never said anything, not because I wanted not to defend myself or tell my side of the story, but because I felt like when you've worked with an honest heart and you are being judged, only God can be the jury. Only God can put the final judgment. Only, you know, the higher powers, whatever you believe in, the universe or whatever, only those higher powers could, you know, decide what happens to me. And I needed to allow for that process to happen. And over time, because I wasn't being hired or anything was happening, I just accepted that I'm a failure, you know, that I should have known better. But I was 21, surrounded by adults, people who are much older than me, who took advantage of my lack of knowledge, my lack of support, my lack of security, my lack of stability, my need to establish security, my need, you know, my need to get attention, because I have a history of struggling with some family dynamics. So I needed affirmation, I needed validation. And I traded that for, you know, for what ended up happening to me. You know, to a certain extent, I could say I deserve it. And that's a part of me that I've had to work on as well, to make peace with that part, so that when I face society, even if someone believes, oh, see, I did this or whatever, it's like, but I know my story. I've walked the journey. I've done the work to heal. And even till this day, it's like 5-6 years later now, people still bring that stuff up. But no one goes and does their research to say, you know, did this really happen? You know, how did Sia treat the situation and all that, you know? Now, what ended up happening, getting to why I'm doing this podcast, Ubizo Lwami. So after 5 years, or for about 5 years of like not working, struggling, trying to find a way, I end up in 2019 getting really, really sick. Now, when people have callings, like my calling journey has been crazy. Don't look at my calling and think, oh, mine is the same or whatever. Yes, if you relate, that's great. But don't look at the way that I've done things and think, this is what Usia is saying. And I think as a healer, it's so important for me to vocalize that indlela zethu azifani. Our ways of healing are not the same. Our gifts are not the same. How we're gifted is not the same. So for me, in 2019, my life was at a standstill for about 4 years at the time. Or 3 years, like four to three years between the two. And nothing had been moving, you know. And one day, while I'm in Langa, me and my cousin decide, okay, we're going to go to St. John's Church. We grew up like in St. John's. My mom, you know, I'm a child where my mom, when she wanted to get pregnant, she went to St. John's. And she has a strong lineage with St. John's because of my grandfather, my dad's dad. And I thank him every day for establishing that connection, because it really saved my life. It really, really did. And you'll understand why as the story goes. So 2019, life is not working out. Me and my cousin decide, okay, let's go to St. John's. Like, just, and with St. John's, they do something called Ukhlahluba. So Ukhlahluba is very similar to like, you go to a sangoma or a healer and they throw bones. But in church, because they work with umoya, umoya is the spirit. It's not to say zangoma don't work with the spirit, but zangoma, you know, work with the spirit, but they have certain tools that the spirit kind of, you know, uses to kind of do these readings and things. Whereas in the church, the spirit is guided by the Holy Spirit. So your spirit is guided by the Holy Spirit, which gives you then the abilities to kind of do that things. It's a speciality that prophets have, and reading bones is a speciality that sangomas have. None of these are easy, they're just different. So I hlahluba at church, and then for the very first time at church, they tell me, ukuthi umhlophe. Now, ukuba umhlophe doesn't mean you have a gift. Ukuba umhlophe means unamadlozi, you have an ancestor, like you have a very alive spiritual life. You're not someone who can just live life in jail. Umoya wako has to, doesn't mean you're a healer, but umoya wako has to have a place where it can work. And when I say it can work, sometimes your ancestors don't need you to be a healer. Sometimes your ancestors just want you to acknowledge them, you know, and acknowledge them is by going to church or doing a ritual or whatever. And these are rituals you might have to do once every now and then. Like sometimes umhlophe is the custodian of the family, and it doesn't mean they're a healer, it just means that they are the selected spiritual leader of that family. Umhlophe ukhethiwe, you know. And then ma ukuthiwa ke ngoku not only umhlophe but unobizo, that now means, okay, we have a calling. I always say that when someone says umhlophe, don't take it at face value, umhlophe, I'm a healer. No, take it as you have an alive spirit that has guides. Those guides seek to help you, but you don't know to do what. And then your job is to then talk to those guides and find out how. Whereas a healer, it's like your guides want you to heal people. They are waiting for you. You know, it's been decided. It's not like it's a choice. At most times, abantu abamhlophe, actually, some of them, you know, sometimes can even speak to ancestors and negotiate and work out things. Not that we can't negotiate on our journey, we can, but it's different, because at the end of the day, you have to heal people. That's what they want. So essentially, I go to church in Klahlube, where they're saying imhlophe. They take me to Utatumia. Oh, I'll talk about him in other episodes, because that's my dad. That's my best friend. He's everything to me. And Utatumia's journey is also very interesting. You know, he's not just a pastor at church. He's also had experiences, his own experiences, which I will not tell with regards to the journey of Ubugqirha and Ubungoma and those things, you know. So I end up seeing him. They tell me I have a gift. They tell me I need to cut my hair, my dreadlocks at the time. So right there and then I end up cutting my dreadlocks. I come home and then I'm told that I need to go to the Eastern Cape to like go cleanse and just be away from the city, because at that point I was also having weird dreams. I was genuinely going crazy, like suicidal vibes, just really, really a wreck, smoking weed every day, like 100 joints or whatever. Not 100 joints a day, but like it felt like 100. I think it was like 20 joints a day, 20 to 30 joints a day. At some point I was selling weed. Like life was just all over the place. Like there was no, literally no sense of, you know, I even forgot I was a thread man. Like I used to even look at magazine covers of myself and be like, I don't know who this person is. Like I couldn't recognize myself because it had been so long. I had lost everything. Life had moved on. People were moving on, not moving on from telling me I didn't pay, but people had built careers. People had recovered. The models that felt were not paid were now stars in the industry, queer models and all these, like, you know, people were actually doing well. And I felt very, very happy for them. At a certain point, I also felt very sad, you know, because I know my platform had a role to play in their growth, but I would never get any recognition because there's a story and a narrative about this is who I am. And that story had controlled a huge part of my life, relationships, friendships, you know, my social life. After that, like, I don't go out anymore, social anxiety, you know, all of these things. You know, but they were out in the world not experiencing those things. For them, it was kind of like this Twitter moment. But that Twitter moment for me became 5 years, you know. Even if people didn't say the look, the feel. You know, even till this day when I walk into a place, I never know if people are looking at me because they remember my actual work and the work that I did for so many years and my contribution to the creative space, or they just remember a moment and a moment was used to define me. Yeah, so I go to the Eastern Cape, as I was saying. Guys, I like to add these ad-libs when I speak because these all add context and they all matter. So I end up going to the Eastern Cape. That's me lighting tobacco because it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the spiritual space and yeah, my candles are on. So I end up going to the Eastern Cape. I spend a lot of time with my gran. Probably one of the best moments of my life. And grateful to my mom and my gran for welcoming me in that moment the way that they did. You know, stayed in the Eastern Cape for 3 months, arrived with no plan to go back. I actually stayed longer than 3 months, actually, if I'm not like probably close to 6 months. I can't even remember now. But it was quite a while, for months. And I stayed there cleansing, going to see someone like a spiritual healer who works with water, you know, consulting with them to kind of wash these things, as Utata from church had said. Then I then came back. Then I was told that I now need to go do a ritual at home. And this ritual is basically slaughtering a sheep just to do a Thanksgiving at home. And I had to do a Thanksgiving at home because my dad's side of the family is very split. A lot of pain, a lot of generational trauma, a lot of things, just a lot of spiritual debt. And I had to go and slaughter there to establish a connection with my ancestors and kind of like the first step to say, hey, I'm here, I recognize you, and I'm strong. I'm willing to walk the path. I know that I have a gift, and so I'm willing to accept, I'm willing to walk the journey. But at that time, when I did the ritual, it was quite evident through so many confirmations that Dinobizo now, like, genuinely I'm born to be a healer. Meeting healers in the taxi, meeting random people, everyone could see that there's something about this person. But I couldn't see it, you know, just because I was sick and I was having these crazy moments. I was also going through, you know, healing through the threaded man, how I viewed myself, how I felt like those things defined me, how I felt like it was the end of my life, and learning that actually it's not the end of my life. I could have a different path. I could have a different pathway. I couldn't create anymore. I realized that creating is not a right, it's a gift. And I just didn't have that gift anymore. And I had to, and whether I'd find it again or not, or whether it would come to me or not, I wasn't entitled to that. life became entitled to that. I started to surrender, but I got sick because obviously I have a calling and I'm having weird experiences, deja vu I'm having. And the thing is about having a calling is that because you are seeing these things by yourself, people make you feel crazy. Like, people make you feel crazy and people make you go through this strenuous process to kind of prove. It takes time. You go to church, you consult. And for me, my gift only started ringing a bell to my mom when she started dreaming about it. That's when she knew, okay, this is like a thing. And also trusting Utata. So I did my ritual. At the ritual, it was amazing. And this is not, when I say ritual, it's not a ritual in the sense that I did some secret ritual. It's just I slaughtered kwasilwa alcohol. Family came, people spoke. I did islawu. Islawu is like a plant you wash in. Each family has one, a different one. I'll explain it in another episode at some point. But yeah, I just did the normal stuff, you know, just to establish that connection. Slept on the floor. And then one of my fond memories was when Amagqirha randomly came. They were not invited. It had nothing to do with Amagqirha, but they came. And they came telling me, yo, you are gifted, you are this, you are that. Like, just adding another layer to, you know, the story of how I became to be a healer, you know. And they were so nice. They were so great. And the way they spoke and the songs were amazing. And also, that's another thing of how I was getting sick with the symptoms. Like, I was just having these crazy reactions to music. All I wanted to do was get high and dance, like, constantly and just trip out, you know, because I felt alone. I fell in love more and more with the ocean. I wanted to swim all the time. So after this ritual, I get told, okay, yeah, things are going to change. You're going to dream, whatever, whatever. No dreams. No dreams. Nothing really changes. But then I start, you know, having not necessarily dreams, but visions of a certain traditional healer whom I end up seeing, whom, you know, this healer is someone I know, someone I've known, someone I respect. And so, you know, this healer takes me in, he sees my situation, he confirmed things I already know, and then he did a ritual with me at the beach. But now, the more time I was spending with this healer and the more I was around him, I started experiencing even other things now. It just got bad. I was seeing beads. And now this is the beginning, I think, of 2022 now. You know, this, and between the ritual and this happening, it's like almost 2 years apart. Like, things in the spiritual world take time, and I don't have a good track of time, guys. Like, the last 5 years feel like one big episode. Like, you know, when you're so broke and so poor and your life comes to nothing to the point where you stop even looking at the time because it doesn't make a difference. Like, you're not, you know, it got to that point for me. So that's why I'm so bad with time. Like, 2019 feels the same as 2020. Okay, not in the same, because it was Corona in 2020, but you get what I mean. So, yeah, he does this ritual. Things get very, very bad to the point where now I get to a point where I'm like, I need to go Twasa because I'm going mad. Like, me and my mom are fighting. Me and my family are not on good terms. I'm just in a restless, restless space. Restless, restless space. Like, then my mom gets to a point where she's like, Danam. And I'm grateful to my mom because I think she goated in this moment where she was like, yeah, when I'm done, I'm wafuneka ngoku siyambe siye ecaweni back to Tatumia and sort this thing out once and for all and actually find out what are the next steps, because after the ritual we never went back. So we went to church and they confirm again that Lomtana needs to get baptized. And now, I've never, like, understand that I've grown up, I was born, like, through St. John's. I grew up going to St. John's, but not for church, for insebenzelo. I don't know what St. John's is about. I don't know about Masango. I don't know the music they sing. I don't know anything. I've never sat through a service there. I've gone to church before, and I remember at church, after 3 hours, I'm like, yo. Like, I've always loved God, and I've always been about God, and I've always believed in God, but it was never, like, to the point where I was thinking about Tikawe Zomoya. So I get told, okay, I need to baptize. And at this point, like, they're saying a lot of information, but they never talked about, I need to wear the blue and white or commit to the church. It was like, you need to cleanse, you need to come baptized on a Sunday and then join the service, and then your parents must give you over to the church type of thing. And I think that's actually a way of saying that that's me wearing the belt, right? So yeah, I get baptized on the Sunday. Like, so it was like 3 Sundays down, because there's a specific church, like, service called Inkonzo yamaThwasa, which happens beginning of every month, first weekend of every month. So I got baptized. Yo, that morning of my baptism, so I arrive at church on the Friday. Yeah, on the Saturday, I'm like, what is going on here? I'm nervous. You know, I meet the other boys. I'm like, is this a school? Is this an institution? Like, what's going on? At this point, I'm scared. I'm like, am I going to join some church cult? Like, and now I'm a realist also. Hey, like, I'm educated. So I know how religion has affected, like, millions of people. I know how religion has been used against me because of my sexuality and how I see things differently, how I am, how I'm feminine and masculine. Like, so going to church was the last thing I wanted. You know, but I was open-minded because something in my spirit was like, you need to heal. Like, the worst has happened. What worse could happen now? You dying. Which, at that point, I was like, I'm glad. So, cool. I'm at church. I'm scared. I sleep over the Saturday. We wake up at 5. At the church service at 5 a.m., they have a thing where they're like, okay, you must get up and speak and ask for your life, for your healing. Like, that's what I like about my church. Like, you can actually speak to God. Like, yeah, but this is not about the services or how they go, but it's about, yeah, this specific story. So I start crying at 5 a.m. in the morning at this. So I get emotional, like, in a way I've never experienced. Like, just things that have been in the, so I just start bawling. We go to the beach to get baptized. I'm bawling. I get in the water. I'm bawling. I'm bawling. I'm bawling. When I get in the water, I'm tripping. I can see my grandfather. I'm seeing my family members, like, and other beings, other spiritual, like, it was like a nation of beings I've never seen before. And I'm seeing creatures that are majestic beyond whatever we can imagine. So I'm like, okay, I'm within now the spiritual realm. It clicks in my mind that, okay, my life has changed. But I don't know to what extent or what this means. Go back to church, get, they held a service, they pray for us, we change for now the amaThwasa service. I get, the service begins and it starts. Hey, the music goes. Hey, I'm restless, umayawam, but not having any episode where I'm crying and doing like crazy stuff. But things are happening. I'm crying. Then they ask, like, then they call us outside, they give me a belt and the white waistcoat. And I'm like, yo, okay. It means I'm getting dressed today. Like, I'm becoming a member of this church. So now imagine also, before you join St. John's, the week before you get baptized, there's another service you have to go to, where kuthoyazinikezela, you know, to God. You're making this commitment to the church and to God. And it's actually funny when I think about it, all the signs were there that I'm actually being put into this church. But at that point, I think I was on automatic, right? Because been for no pila. So, when they tell us we can't smoke, we can't eat pork, we can't do all these things. And I'm just like, what is going on? Like, what? And I'd been smoking a lot of weed, you know. I still smoke a bit of weed and tobacco now because of umoya, but it's within a context of, they know about it at church, and it has to do with also my spiritual gift, because I have ancestors and Isithunya that, you know, smoke, that used to smoke tobacco, so it helps elevate my spirit now. But I don't drink, I don't go out at night, like all these things. And yeah, so that started, and I just committed. Hey, I remember it's like my spirit was in charge. Actually, my body was just going. I don't know why I was doing things, but I was like, I'm doing this because it feels right. That's also another thing that clicked. So I get dressed at church on the Sunday. Yo, and after I get dressed, the service goes on, and something happened to me. I can't describe it, but the next moment, I'm standing up by the podium, and ngiyashumayela. Because as umzalwane, you know, when umzalwane was the first level at church. Because just like in the journey of ubusangoma, there's levels to the gift. There's levels to how you progress spiritually. So I'm still at like the first stage at church, even though my gifts or my ancestors are like advanced, but me as Usia, I'm still a human being that has to kind of grow in line with the spirit, you know. So and be able to evolve and transform and all these things. So yeah, so I joined the church in Yashumayela, and then literally the next week I got a scholarship to study at Red and Yellow to go back to design after they had rejected me so many months and put me through a traumatic application process. All of a sudden they have a bursary for me in something else I didn't even want to study, mind you. But I take it because it's my ancestors. Now things are opening up. Imagine after 5 years of not having any breakthrough, you join St. John's. All of a sudden things are breakthrough. And the only thing I get told by Utata is, please trust me, give of your life. Like really, really just open up, allow your soul to speak. And I allowed that to happen. And I started crying a lot at church. And it started coming out of me like this newfound confidence and feeling like I've arrived at a place where I've healed. So at St. John's, we have to do insebenzelo. So insebenzelo, you are doing ibafu, you are ispedu, you are palaza. So I got into that, got into ukusebenzela abantu. When I first arrived at church, I felt isolated because people knew I was famous before, whatever, tattoos, you know, I'm this different person known to be sex positive. So I go through a period of time where I've given myself a church, but I feel like an outsider because I'm also questioning, like, am I worthy to be here now? Because the more I got into St. John's, the more I started understanding it and why the people are there. And all of us are broken. All of us are looking to heal. All of us have different stories. All of us have different gifts. And there's this place that allows us to do our gifts in a way that helps and guides our ancestors through God, you know. And I'm grateful for that place because I couldn't go and Twasa because I was going to die, because there's other, you know, evil things waiting for me in that space, because ngumdana wamanzi, but some family members got involved with amayeza, and so that has a negative implication. So if ngenga Twasa like that, it wouldn't have worked. And also finding out along the journey ukuthi I'm someone who is being initiated directly by my ancestors, and the church is just facilitating that process and providing context and a safe space and the tools for me to be able to work. But they're not actually in charge of my process. The church's responsibility is to make sure that I grow closer to God, I help people, you know, and that's how the gifts grow and do the things that my Isithunywa and my ancestors want, you know, but also do these things within a reasonable frame. Because at church, it's about protecting God's children, but we understand that there are laws of life, you know, and in these laws of life, we can't deny the existence of ancestors when we can see them, when they're giving us these abilities, you know. So it's like you're in a space that becomes like the intermediary between you and your ancestors. It becomes the platform where, because now you're church washing, using white candles, and each time you wash, you're washing your ancestors and bringing them to the church, and then they end up learning how to speak to you through the church, how to use that platform, how to function as Isithunywa with you in that place. So your ancestors also kind of transform, and they heal, and they, you know, transform through that process, the process of you ukhanyisa, the process of ubathandazela, the process of reading the Bible, the process of ukushumayela, the process of ukusebenzela abantu, the process of cleansing. All of that just starts transforming idlozi lakho, isithunywa sakho. It starts just training them to work with that space. And for them, it becomes natural when, you know, they are water healers and you have that water gifts, because St. John's is a church of water. So they feel right at home. So my soul felt right at home. But it was tough, you know, waking up at 5 a.m, going to school the whole week, then going to church the whole week. Then while I'm at church, I'm having dreams. I'm, you know, all these things. Then I'm told at church that I have to wait for certain things to happen. Because so at church, when you are gifted, not everyone at our church is like spiritually gifted. Some people go there because it's a nice church. But for those of us who are spiritually gifted, there's still like rituals we have to perform to become prophets in the church, essentially, because that's what we become, prophets. So prophets are basically sangomas of the church, if you think about it, because we sing and dance, we, you know, we cleanse people, we heal people, we pray over people. And sangoma does that in a different context using different tools. So that's what actually a prophet is. A prophet is a sangoma, but that works in the institution of God, you know. And also, like, finding out that, like, as much as we read the Bible at church and as much as we have a uniform and all these things, those things are actually not there to be, to kind of make our church a religion. It's our yomoya, but ancestors love izambato, ancestors love song and dance, ancestors love for us to slaughter, to settle their debts, all these things. So the church caters for that. So it's our yomoya, but it has everything in the church is intentional, and it has to do with respecting God, number one, and working with God to work with ancestors. And these ancestors, these tunya, and they're all serving God. I don't know how to put it right now, you know. So as I was saying, joined St. John's 5 months in, I start getting A's at school, I'm doing well. And long story short, I ended up graduating last year, I think, with four distinctions, yeah, from Red and Yellow. I got a job, did an interview the Monday, had the job by the Thursday, working with amazing people, working with, you know, working with, like, people that I never thought I could be around, you know, being in spaces where I can be myself. I'm in a great relationship with my girlfriend, you know, I'm in a great space, you know, with my family, and I'm understanding myself and the church even more. I'm having the most beautiful visions. Life is still tough, but I'm going to get into that in part two of, you know, my podcast. But I think this is just past part one to give you guys like a foundation of my journey and my life, and to get to a little bit know me as a person. And I'm so grateful that everything happened in my life, and right now I'm in a space where I've completely surrendered. Like, I don't plot my days, I don't plot, you know, next year or whatever. I'm working hard every day, yes, but it's not, there's not a sense of I need this to define me. I need this to define me. I think my life right now is based on loving my partner, whom I want to be my wife. And we've entered a new phase of our relationship where, and I'm grateful for it. It's tough, but where we're relearning about each other in a way. And it's the third year of our relationship. And because we're constantly evolving, and I love that. So we're constantly challenging each other, and we entered a space now where we're learning about each other even more than we have before, and the things that really, really matter. A relationship that, like, has had its really difficult moments because my healing took part in that relationship, and my partner also was healing in that relationship and still is, and we both are still. I don't think healing ever stops. So life is really in a great space, and being a church is just, oh my goodness. It's hard still because the things I'm experiencing, how I'm graduating. Even last year, I ended up doing my ritual at home in the Eastern Cape, which was one of the most special times with my mom. The church sent someone to come.